Welcome to Discovery One, Module 4, Part 2. This is going to finish out the chapter. And this is all going to be talking about network cabling and different connectors and various other things that are in the chapter. So, first thing that's up is cables and connectors. Now, there are two different types of network cables. There's copper, which is your Ethernet and coaxial cable, and then there's fiber, which is your fiber optic cable. And each of these has various connectors that can be used to connect them to the different network cards and other network devices. Now, there is a section in here under the network cable that talks about crosstalk. Now, crosstalk is basically when you have electrical signals that run through the cabling that will basically just jump from one pair to another, or one cable to another, and they'll just interfere with each other, and network transmissions get all scrambled and garbled from it. This is not a good thing. Now, in this section, they talk about what they call twisted pair, and they also talk about coaxial cable. And there's two different types of twisted pair that they talk about. They talk about your regular telephone cable twisted pair, which is considered category 3 or Cat 3. They have 3 to 4 twists per foot. So what happens is you have either two wires or multiple wires that run through your cable. And so they twist these wires together to try to prevent any signals from kind of jumping one wire to the other. And so these wires go in a nice little insulated, or not insulated, but a nice little insulator goes around them, and that's what makes up your telephone cable, your Ethernet cable. So your telephone cable, your standard Cat 3 telephone cable, has 3 to 4 twists per foot. This really is not that many, so you can get some interference and some noise in there. Your Ethernet cable, in comparison, which is Cat 5 or Cat 5E, I believe it is, which is the which is a gigabit Ethernet cable, has 3 to 4 twists per inch. So your chance of crosstalk is still there, but it is not near as much as what you would get with a regular phone cable. Okay, so now there's two different types of twisted pair. There's shielded and there's unshielded, and we'll talk about the unshielded first, because it's like the most common thing that you're gonna find out there. And the text says it's good for most people in North America. Now, these are Cat 3, Cat 5, Cat 5E, which is your gigabit Ethernet cable, and Cat 6. So your telephone and your Ethernet are considered untwisted shielded, or unshielded. Let me retry that. Unshielded twisted pair, which is a UTP, which is the abbreviation that you'll most commonly see with that. Now, with the Ethernet, your Cat 5, your Cat 5E, and your Cat 6, you're going to terminate into an RJ45, which is kind of looks like the telephone cable, like what you've seen, but it's a lot bigger, well, a little bit bigger. Your Cat 3, which is your telephone cable, terminates into an RJ11. And yes, these are definitely things that you will want to know and keep in mind when you're doing networking. Okay, so then they talk about shielded twisted pair and screen twisted pair. Now, the unshielded twisted pair is basically the, like I said, the multiple, either two or multiple wires run through an insulating jacket, which is your outer jacket, which is the whole cable. So that's susceptible to outside electromagnetic interference, or so I bring this up because the shielded twisted pair actually has shielding between the wires that are twisted together and the outer cable jacket. So your chance of interference is a lot lower than with the UTP, the unshielded twisted pair. But also bear in mind that although this is good for like factory use, for networking in factories and whatnot, and they say that it is pretty common over in Europe, you are going to find that it is not as flexible as your unshielded twisted pair. So your shielded twisted pair and your screen twisted pair are more commonly used for like factory settings, and they're going to be a lot more expensive because of the shielding, and they are not as flexible. Okay, so your UTP and your STP, which is your shielded twisted pair, and your SCTP, which is your screen twisted pair, generally offer you anywhere from 10 megabits per second up to I think 1 gigabit per second, which I think that's the common, well, not quite the common, but I think that's the highest standard that they have right now, isn't it? Yeah, I'm thinking that gigabits, like 1 gigabit per second. I haven't seen anything higher.
Yeah, I think that's the
But I'm
best
thinking
Ethernet
that's
you're
where.
getting.
That's what I thought. okay. So, in this section, well, before I go on, are there any questions thus far? Put your question in audio, Anginulu.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah, you are saying that 1 gigabytes per second. Is it the speed, sir?
Gigabit Ethernet is the fastest that you can get right now, at least in the Ethernet cable.
Yeah, one more data I have, sir. Sorry, for what is different? Ethernet and internet both are same, or it is like pronunciation, sir?
Well, let me see. Your Ethernet cable is your standard network cable. That's what you use to connect to your networks. That's what you use to connect to your DSL modems and whatnot. Is that what you're, I'm thinking, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, your Ethernet and internet. What is the difference of both?
Okay. Ethernet, it's Ethernet. Ethernet is a type of cable. Your internet is just the whole network. So yeah, that's it's two totally completely different things. But your Ethernet is actually you it's physical cable that's used to network computers together.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Anything else before we move on? I'm not in chat. Who, can you put that in audio?
Ethernet is actually a cable, or it's a standard?
Technically, it is both. There's an Ethernet standard, which is your IEEE 802.3, and then the Ethernet cable. So it's technically both.
Yeah, because the cable had to be built to the standards as well, so.
Any other questions? Okay, so now that we're done talking about Ethernet, we'll move on and talk about coaxial cable. And this is just your standard cable, like what you've seen on your TV sets, or for those of you who are in ham radio like me, that's the cable that you're gonna see that's the coax cable. And it's basically a copper braid with a bunch of insulation around it. And the connectors at the ends of that, which they don't actually talk about. And honestly, I don't remember the connector type at the end. But do they? I don't think they talk about the connector type in the chapter. But anyway, so you get a higher transmission rate or higher bandwidth using coax, but primarily it's going to be your ISPs that use it in their network operations center. Because keep in mind from last week that your ISPs want to keep or want to use the cables that will get them high transmission rates, because bear in mind they do have a lot of traffic going through their network operations center. Now, the next thing they talk about is fiber optic cable, and this is used for the high-speed backbones of the internet, and it can be used for local networks, but do bear in mind that if you do that, it is going to be rather expensive. Now, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit here. With coaxial cable and with your Ethernet cables, they are subject to outside interference, like electromagnetic interference from equipment, from radio transmissions, and various other sources of interference. Lightning can cause interference as well. Now, I'm backtracking because I wanted to cover that and to kind of bring that point up, that fiber optic cable is used, like I said, it was used for the high-speed backbones. Now, this cable uses light pulses rather than electrical pulses to send data. And this is actually made up of lots of little glass fiber strands. And they have insulation around that. And so the light travels down these glass fibers and it goes from one point to another. Now, because it uses light pulses, you're not subject to the electromagnetic interference or the electrical interference that you are with your coaxial cable or your twisted pair cables. So in that regard, the fiber, that plus the bandwidth rates for fiber, are why it's used for the high-speed backbones. Okay, so, and the other thing they do talk about is multi-mode and single mode. Now, your multi-mode allows for two directions of transmission. So you can have one one transmission going from one point to another, and you can have, like, okay, so you have two computers, computer A and computer B, or rather two networks. Let me change that around. You have two networks. You have network A, network B. So with multi-mode fiber optic cable, you can send stuff from network A to network B while you are sending information from in reverse from network B to A, and they shouldn't interfere with each other because they are using light pulses. So you have that two-way directional communication that you can go. And this is Carrie can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but this is like more expensive fiber optic cable. And then you have your single mode, which only allows for one-way communication. So you have network A to B. Network A can send stuff to B, and then network B, once all the information's sent, network B can then turn around and send information back to network A.
Whichever one uses the lasers
Okay.
is the one that's more expensive.
Yeah, and multi-mode uses multi-mode's the one that uses the lasers.
Pretty sure that's how that goes.
Okay. Questions before we move on to this activity. Go ahead, Anjanula.
Thank you, sir. First of all, I know you said that there are two types of different models, like cables, multi-mode and single mode. So how does it look both physically, sir?
This, but I'm gonna defer to Carrie on this if he's still around, because honestly, I have not seen them.
Now we are using many cables like tar cable, not TV cables, and internet fiber optic cable also have plug from and the sealed with a jacket. So does it do we think is it a multi-mode or a single mode?
Brian, can I answer this question?
Go ahead. If you have an answer, go ahead.
I'm Chandrasekhar here. See, this multi-mode and single-mode cables, they look like same. Only thing, it's difficult to make out people like us. But multi-mode cable, it is written something on a cable. It is written as a M or something like that. And a single-mode cable, it is written something like S. Or by way of looking into the cable open end, we can look into the open end and make out different color rays will be coming out. So that's one way of making out multi-mode and single mode.
Just a minute, please. Chandrasekhar, thank you. But one more thing, where it has written exactly for if you want to show anything, even we are visually person, if you want to show anybody, so where it is located exactly, writing form, written form.
I'm sorry, Brian. I'll just update him. So this is a print kind of a thing. It's a manufacturer prints a serially throughout the length of the cable. He'll be writing it as a single mode SM or MM, something like that. He'll be printing it throughout the cable. It is easy to make out.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah,
Thank you,
we've never actually
Chandrasekhar, because
seen these kind of cables, so we're
yeah.
not entirely sure. I think Grace saw some once, but.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've never put my hands on any fibers, fiber optic cables, so I'm not sure. So that definitely does help. And I think there's a description in the chapter of them as well. So, that might be worth a look. Anything, any other questions before we go and do this activity?
Quick comment on fiber.
One small question. So I want to know whether getting connection from through cable is more speeder, or getting connection from Wi-Fi it's more speeder. Which one is better?
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
I was just saying, you guys were talking about fiber. If anybody's ever seen the Toslink cables on stereos, that's pretty much what a subscriber connector looks like. The digital video cables on stereos, digital audio cables on stereos for SP diff.
All right. Anything else before we move on to the activity here?
Yeah, Anjaneyalu, please. Last chapter quiz also we didn't touch.
What about the last chapter quiz?
We did not touch it, sir, still.
The chapter 3 quiz.
Yeah, previous chapter number third.
Oh, well, if Brian wants to do that when he feels like it, he can. The quizzes are not required. They're a good idea, but they're not actually required. So it's up to Brian whether he does that and when he does it.
I thought that had been done. Okay. All right. Well, we'll finish this chapter out, and if we've got time, we'll go back and do chapter 3 quiz. Because I'll have to pull that one up anyway. So, let's go ahead and move on to this activity. So, in short, you're going to be given a scenario, and you want to decide whether fiber or UTP is would be best given the scenario. Okay, so first situation says a company must provide connectivity between three buildings on a single campus. The cables must be run outside, and there is a high probability of lightning storms in the area. So, would this be fiber? Would fiber or UTP cable best be used in this situation? Yes, fiber would be the better choice. If you're looking at, and the situation did say that lightning storms were a possibility. Which is kind of why I backed up and pointed that out. Shielded twisted pair is still subject to interference by electrical storms or electromagnetic interference. Not as much as the unshielded, but you're still going to get that electrical interference in there. So that would be why fiber would be the better choice for that one. Okay, so next scenario says that a company must provide connectivity between two buildings that are located 1 kilometer apart. Fiber or UTP. Oops, and I forgot the lengths. I forgot to mention the lengths of those, but. And fiber would do you. I forgot to mention the length restrictions on that. Your UTP would actually the length for that is, yes, that is correct. It is 100
Or
meters
328
or
feet.
300 and, yep. I do not remember the distance for fiber right offhand, and I don't have it in my notes either, but I know they
It
say it in
can
the
be up to
chapter, so.
kilometers. It depends. I mean,
Chandrasekhar, go ahead.
What about microwave link in this case? Because the distance is very long and laying physical cable is a bit difficult, right? So if we use a microwave link, is it the right idea or no?
Yeah, why not?
Well, you could, but that wasn't one of the options. that might be an option, just based on the whole way that microwaves travel, but I'm not gonna go there.
Or it is a satellite connection.
That would be another option if that was one of the choices, but your choices are just between fiber and ETP.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Let's see. Scenario number 3. A company must provide 100 Mbps connectivity to users located in the main office. Hold on. Yeah, okay. So, company has to provide 100 Mbps connectivity to the users through cable running from the main switch to their terminals. And the maximum distance is 60 meters. STP would do it if that was one of the options, but it's UTP is, or actually twisted pair in general, would be the better way to go. Less expensive and you're only running the 60 meters. So, that's that. Good job. Okay, so, let's go ahead and move on to working with working with twisted pair. Now, there are cabling standards which specify how cables are tested and installed. They also specify how cables are supposed to be built. Now, there's a nice little diagram here. It's 4.5.1 that shows all the organizations that deal with cable that deal with the cable standards. And they talk about power over Ethernet, which is 48 volt DC power line that runs alongside your Ethernet cable, and it's all strung into one run of cable or one length of cable. I have seen these used, and they're actually pretty good because you don't have to worry about having your power outlets really close to things. You can set it up, at least the one I had seen was used for a webcam that was mounted up on the roof of a hotel here, and they wanted the power over Ethernet to they wanted the power over Ethernet to be used so that they wouldn't have to worry about running separate power cables. So it's really, really nice. Okay, so let's talk about UTP. The power over Ethernet. Okay, so what you have is you have a power line, an actual power, like a power cord actually is a better way to put it, that runs in the same jacket as your Ethernet cable. So in effect you have two cables that run in one jacket. And then you have Okay.
Brian Chandra here again. This you're talking about the power on Ethernet. Is it 5 volts or 12 volts?
The power over Ethernet shows 48 volt DC power. So
how about the twisted pair? Does it make use of the plus or minus 5 volts or only plus 5 volts cable?
I'm not 100% sure I'd answer that one. I'll have to check on that one, because I'm not sure how exactly to answer that. But I'll look into that one and get you an answer next week. Okay. Any other questions before we continue on with UTP? Okay, well, there is an organization called the TIA/EIA, which is, oh lord, now that I want to remember it, it's not coming to me. Telecommunications Industry Association and the Industry Alliance, I believe is what that one is. So they develop these two cabling standards. It's 2568A and 2568B. Now, this is where the pinouts actually come into play. And I'll get into that in just a little bit. But what you end up with, in effect, is just reversing the transmit and receive pins between the two standards. That's how you get your crossover cables as compared to your straight through cables. Now, there's a nice little diagram in the text that will show you the different pin layouts. Go ahead, Arpit.
Can you please tell me the difference between a cross-through and straight-through cable? I don't think we covered it earlier.
You're kind of quiet. I didn't get all of that.
Difference between a straight-through and cross-through.
Okay. Yeah, I'm coming to that. But basically what ends up happening, your straight-through cables use one standard or the other. So you're either using the T568A or the T568B standard for both ends. Your crossover cables use T568A standard for one end and T568B for the other. So in effect, what happens is you are just reversing your transmit and receive pairs, and that's what would make the crossover.
What I know about cross-through, because where I use cross-through is like networking between two computers directly without the need of hub or a switch, and straight-through is like you need to connect through the switch. Though the newer NICs don't need the cross-through cable to connect directly to the computer.
Well, we're kind of getting a little bit ahead on this discussion, but yes, you are correct. There are some of the network cards that will work straight through in the crossover cables to where you can use, or you should be able to, I'm not going to say you can, you should be able to use either or to connect, and the cards will be able to sense which one you've got, and then which cable you've got, and then they'll adjust accordingly. But that is not a good recommended practice, because that really does depend on the network cards themselves being able to make that adjustment. And I don't think that all network cards are capable of doing that.
No, they're not.
Can I answer this question? I'm Chandrasekhar here.
Go ahead.
Especially in the case of any cable or any interface, communication has to takes place between the transmit and receive. The transmitted signal has to be connected to the receiver point. So in the case of Ethernet, I'm not sure which is the TXD transmit and receive pin here, but pin number 3. See, if it's a pin number 1 is a transmit signal, then pin number 3 is a receive signal, then it has to be cross twist, you have to exchange between 1 and 3 at the other end of the cable. One end will be connected to transmit, and the pin number 3 is connected to receive pin. So that way, in a switch, they have a capability of exchanging inside. The transmit is connected to a receive, and receive is connected to a transmit. In the case of Ethernet or the host computer, they are not done like that. So for that reason, we need to do a crossover in the case of an Ethernet cable when we connect it to a host to host.
Yeah, I'll agree with most of that.
As will I. That's a really, really good answer and explanation for that one. And yes, you're right. And I'm going to go over the pinouts and all, which they are in your text, so you can read them. Now, I'm just kind of looking through to see what we've got. Well, the majority of what I've got in my notes here, we've pretty well already covered. But, so what you have with the T568A standard, your pin 1 is connected, it's a green and white colored wire. Okay, that's cool. Alright, so pin 1, and this is kind of going to get a little confusing. I think this may get a bit confusing, but it's in your notes, so you can look
you
it
can
up
sing for
and
it
and read it. Yeah, right. I don't have that
what
song memorized.
Green, white, green, blue, white, orange, orange, what? That one.
Oh, that one.
Which reminds me, I'll do that at the end of lecture, but thank you, Carrie. You just reminded me of something. But
the
no,
lab, right?
you don't... yeah.
You should probably do that now and at the end while you're thinking about it.
Valid
what
point.
Would you like to do?
Just,
well,
I was
going to mention...
Yeah, you go.
Oh, go ahead, Sean.
Were you just going to let them know about the write-up you need?
Yes, that's what I was going to do.
Okay, so what you do is talk about it now, talk about it at the end, and write it up on...
Okay, easy enough. Alright, since Carrie nicely brought it to my attention, and I know I forgot about it last week, there are, I think the first couple of labs in Chapter 4 that are dealing with cable testing and cable making. So, the easy way to do this, there are recordings on the under the Discovery links on the QCAT website. And I believe they're 2007 or 8.
No, they're in
audio
lab recording. They're in they're in their own place now.
Oh, okay. All right. That's the audio lab recordings, right?
Yeah, they're in there.
Okay, okay. So you go under the discovery link, and then you go to the audio lab recordings, pick up one of those. I think there's multiple ones of them. At least there was last I took the course. You pick up one, and all I need is just a little paragraph saying, you know, how you make the cables and how you would go about testing them. And I believe that will cover like the first, I think it's the first two labs or three labs that deal with the cable testing. So, and I'll bring this up again at the end of the lecture. Okay, so what you end up with, and your wiring, and your wires in your Ethernet cables are different colors, which is what Carrie was alluding to with the nice, wonderful song, which if you pick up the right recording, you will hear. Rather interesting one too. On top of that, so you have different colored wiring that you connect together into pairs, and then those pairs go into the pins on your RJ45 jack. So pins 1 and 2 are both the green white, which is pin 1, and the green, which is pin 2, or wire 2, I mean. Yeah, wires first, then the colors, then the pairs. Okay, so your first wire and your second wire are both paired together, and that's pair 3, and I'll go into what these pairs are for in just a minute. So your wire number 3, which is an orange white, goes to pair 2. Wire 4, which is blue, which doesn't go to anything. Blue-white, which is wire 5, also doesn't have a pair associated with it. Wire 6, which is orange, also goes to pair 2. Wire 7, which is brown-white, goes to pair 4. And wire 8, which is brown, also goes to pair 4. Now, these are in your notes, so hopefully them over. And like I said, they're in your notes, so you can look them over. I don't believe there's anything on the exams about the specific pairs, and I do have one note on the exams which I will mention at the end, and since I'm thinking about it, I'll mention it here. In the Chapter 4 exam, there are going to be three different diagrams. Now, because of the way the exam's laid out, unless it has changed, there's no real way to distinguish which diagram goes with which question, or which description goes with which question. So,
there's the questions that are pretty much all worded the same way. So
yes,
there's nothing
they
that
are.
We match up.
So
the description file explains that. So
yeah,
if you don't remember
that is
and
in
you're
the
good and you download your descriptions, it will tell you.
That is in the description, so yeah, just look through that. If those are the only three you miss, then you're really doing good. but you can always, if you have sighted help, you can always get them to look. See if you can get sighted help to look at the different diagrams, and you can go that way. But if you don't worry about it. Just try to answer the other questions correctly, and you should be good to go. Okay. I don't think I really want to. Well, I have the T568B standards here in my notes too. And they're also in the text. But the The only difference being the wiring schemes on the between the two standards. And we've already talked about straight through cables. Yeah, we've already talked about straight through cables and the crossover cables. So I don't really think that needs repeating unless anybody needs it. And if somebody needs it, I can always go back through it. Now, they talk about unlike devices.
Unlike devices.
Brian Chandrasekhar here. Is it possible to tell me the signal assignment to the pin numbers?
You should Google put which some standard? Headphones on if you've got them.
Oh, Google it.
You might be sharing your connection.
Or look it up in your notes. The signal assignments are in your notes. If we go through them, we're just going to confuse 98% of the students. But suffice it to say that 1 and 2 are your transmit pair and 3 and 6 are your receive pair. That's about all you need to know.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody have any other questions?
Brian, can you just mention what is the maximum length allowed in the case of UTP, STP, and optical fiber, etc.?
Okay. Your UTP is maximum of 100 meters, or roughly about 330 feet. If I'm not mistaken, that should be about the same for your STP and your SCTP, your screen twisted pair. Quite frankly, I do not remember right off the top of my head about fiber, but I believe that one is in your notes as well, or you can always Google it.
That's when I read it, not a problem.
Can we just say a heck of a long way for right now, and then when you look at it, you know?
It depends on the fiber. This is the problem. So, multi-mode fiber doesn't go as long as single-mode fiber, and they keep making it longer and longer as the years go on. So look it up. Like, multi-mode fiber only used to go 1,000 meters. Now I think it goes like 3 clicks. So, yeah, look it up.
And really, you're not gonna, I don't believe, on any of the exams, I shouldn't say that. I don't think you'll need to know the length for fiber cable on any of the exams. Now, the...
You'll be asked possibly what the best thing to put in would be in a certain situation, but you don't have to know the exact...
Yeah, they're not going to say, what is the maximum length of fiber cable, blah, blah. You are going to have things like the little activity before. When is it good to use such and such type of cable? Grace is right on that, but yeah. They don't come out and straight ask you about the lengths of the fiber, which is good, because it seems pretty nebulous.
I would keep in mind the max length for your twisted pair cables, your UTP and your STP, because those will be testable. I don't remember if it's on this Chapter 4 exam, but they will be testable at some point. And it's always good to know what your maximum cable runs are anyway when you're doing network installations and planning and such.
I have one more quick question. Can I ask you, Brian?
Go ahead.
What should be the distance from the host to a switch or the adapter on the wall?
That is going to really depend on the physical layout of whatever building or your physical environment that you're installing the network in. So there's not really any good answer for that one, except it's going to depend on your physical environment.
The standards are 90 meters for vertical cable, 7 meters for horizontal, and 3 meters for drop lead is the official breakdown. So drop lead is from your wall panel to your workstation. Vertical cabling is the stuff that runs in deep in the building, and the horizontal is the stuff that comes out to the comes out from the main distribution frame. So they're the recommendations. You don't need to know that though.
Thank you.
Okay. So they talk in here about like and unlike devices. Unlike devices are the ones that use your straight through cables. So your unlike devices would be like your switch to PCs, your PC to your hub, or your switch to your router. So those are your unlike devices. Those are the ones that use your straight through cables. Your crossover cables are used for like devices. So that would be like two PCs connected. Does anybody remember chapter 3.1.5.3 lab? two switches are a switch to a hub or two hubs. Or two routers connected to each other. Or they say PC to a router. Uses a crossover. So any questions thus far?
Brian, I have one quick question. See, like devices, like for example, if I'm connecting from one switch to another switch, I need to use a crossover cable or a straight cable. And similarly, from router to router, if I need to connect it, is it a cross cable or a straight cable?
In the case of connecting two switches or two routers together, you would need, according to your text, you would need crossover cable in both situations.
Most switches auto negotiate these days though, so read the box that your switch came in, because most of the time they just work it out.
Brian, I have one more quick question. How do I make out on the switch? I need to use a cross cable on that, a straight cable on that.
Okay. I'm sorry, because you're not using headphones, I didn't hear a word of that, except for do you need a cross cable. Did you catch it, Brian?
Headphones are required for this class.
I think there's a couple people that are at the same computer.
If there's a couple of people at the same computer, then we can't help that. We could send them a rock star. But that's fine. If there's a few people around the same computer, that's acceptable.
There's not much we can do
about
that one.
But if you're not one of the people around sharing a computer with someone, then you need to be wearing headphones.
I'm sorry for it. What I wanted to ask you how do we know that whether this switch or a router connecting between switch to switch or router to router, do we need to use a straight cable or a cross cable? In a switch on the device manual, do they mention that?
Yeah, may I speak, sir? Anjanelu?
Go.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there is a small... my solution is, even though if many people sit in front of one computer also, there is a solution. While speaking in Ventilo, we should have to reduce the volume. So we cannot get this stuff from people who are speaking. That is my solution.
No. You have to have headphones if you're on your own computer. That is a requirement of the course.
I'm not saying for everyone, madam. It is only for people who sit many people sit one computer. It is applicable for all. I'm saying for them only.
Oh, you're saying if there are multiple people sitting in the computer, they should reduce the volume while they're talking? That's a bit tricky if they don't have a volume control.
And look, then people are going to crane their necks to hear and everything, and we don't want any neck problems for our poor students.
Could you... one thing we might do is have people switch to text-to-speech, because sometimes those controller sounds are so loud. Okay, well, somebody
yeah.
is not using, but...
Somebody's got their audio misconfigured, because I'm hearing the key-up beeps, and I shouldn't hear those. So if that person is running JAWS and wants help with me fixing their setup, they can get in touch with me at some point. Because I shouldn't hear your key-up beeps. Back to you, Brian.
Okay. Anything else before we go into cable termination? Okay.
Brian, I have one quick question. See, in the case of a cross cable or straight cable, is there any identification where VI people can make out on by touching the cable?
No,
there's not. Best course of action, if you have crossover and straight through cables, if you have some way to label them, that would probably be your best course of action. Okay, anything else?
I wanted to say, why there is no standard for this particular thing to identify these cables for the VI people?
Because sighted people don't need them. You look at the cable and you can tell.
Or you'd look at the box, because the cable itself won't tell you, will it?
Yes, it does. If you actually look at the cable, you can tell which way the colours are run. And you can actually tell by the order of the colours, whether it's a straight through or crossover. So you can see that 1 and 2 are on the left-hand side and they're a certain colour, and 3 and 6 on the other end are in the same spot, then you know that's a crossover cable.
Actually, what I wanted to ask here, see, for the vision-impaired person, he needs a sighted people help in that case, right?
Or get or find out which ones are crossover and mark them.
Yes.
Okay. So they talk about the different connector types here with the RJ45 versus your network cards and your patch panels and your wall outlets under cable termination. And they talk about terminating to patch panels as well. So you have your network operations centers use these patch panels so that they can quickly rearrange stuff as they need to. So if they need to rearrange a couple of different routers or whatnot, they can just unplug them.
RJ stands for Registered Jack, and it's very interesting to look up on Wikipedia and see that they're not quite as standard as we think they should be. I was really bored one morning and did this at work when I didn't have anyone to work with.
I hadn't even thought to look that up. Good lord. That must have been a boring day. Anyway. So they talk about... these patch panels that use the RJ45 connections in the front, and then they have these cables that have to be punched down in the back of these outlets. That's pretty much what it's like. So, in this, they talk about the fact that your RJ45 has eight different connectors, or eight conductors, excuse me. And so they're wired according to either the T568A or B standards. Now, when they go into your patch panel, you're required with a patch panel to use this punch down tool. And this is, I don't think this is stuff on your exam, but it's somewhat interesting to know. So you use a punch down tool at the patch panel to make sure that your eight wires, your eight conductors, are all going to fit nicely and go into the patch panel the way they're supposed to. And these tools actually cut off any excess wire that may be there. They talk about the fact that these punch down tools aren't required to terminate to your standard wall jacks. Now, when you are making your cables, if you untwist more cable or more wire than you need, you're going to really degrade your signal. That's pretty much all there is to that section. Any questions? Okay, so let's talk about cable testing. They say you can use a visual inspection. For sighted people, yes, you can do that. Because you would be able to see if something's not connected right. For us, that could get a little tricky. Now, they do have cable testers that some of them talk. I do have one, which I don't have on me right now. So you plug the cables into them, and then it will tell you if the cables are good or if they have shorts in them, if there's connections and the like. Whoops. So those are actually pretty handy. They have cable certifiers, which are used to determine performance of the cable, and then they record this information in graphical form. Multimeters, nice, wonderful things to have as well, if you can get your hands on one. They measure voltage, current. They'll do resistance, capacitance. Some of them will do continuity of cables or circuits. And that's pretty much all I wanted to cover on that. There are some cable testers that will measure attenuation and crosstalk, which actually could be pretty useful. Attenuation is pretty much your loss of signal as it goes down the cable. Now, there's nothing you can do about this because if you have really, really long cables, you are going to lose signal. There's nothing you can do. It's just a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's pretty much just electrical theory that that's going to
A
happen.
given.
What's that?
It's just a given that that's how it works.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's kind of what I was looking for. So your crosstalk, which we talked about before, is when signals will cross over from wire to wire. Now, there's two different types of crosstalk. There's near-end crosstalk, which is abbreviated NEXT, which is crosstalk that happens like really close to one end or the other. Actually, it's... Hang on. Near-end crosstalk is happens nearest the cable tester. Far-end happens, obviously, further away at the other end. Now, if there's anything that the cable testers or the cable certifiers show that's wrong with the cables, you're going to have to start over and remake them and re-terminate them into the RJ45 jacks.
This is why a lot of people just buy them, if you can.
Yeah. cable making can get a little bit tricky. I've seen it done before, and it definitely can get rather tricky if you don't know what you're doing. So it would be easier to buy them, but if you want to go in and make them yourself, well, you can. Just know that you're probably going to go through a bunch of connectors and a bunch of cable doing it, at least so you get the hang of it. I'm not sure how easy it would be to do this without sighted assistance. I had a guy that my brother worked for that tried to explain it to me, and I just kind of got really, really lost on it. But that was like probably about 7 or 8 years ago, and I really haven't messed with it since. Okay, questions on this section of cable testing.
Brian Chandrasekhar here again. You said cable testing, there's an attenuation test and a continuity test. At the same crosstalk test, is there any insulation test also in this?
Let's see, you have attenuation, you have crosstalk. What was the other test you were asking about?
It is called as insulation test. Basically, you know, it is tested between the cable and the insulation of the cable. They check with a pretty high voltage, like in kilovolts kind of a thing like that. And if insulation breaks down, then that cable is a bad cable.
There's actually a recording where we use a Fluke multimeter and we go through all the tests. If you listen to the cable testing lab, we cover all of that, the 2007 cable testing lab.
Okay, I'll look into that. Thank you.
Okay. And yes, you will have to listen to a cable testing lab at some point anyway, because you need to do the write-up for it. Any other questions on cable testing? Okay, let's move on to cabling best practice. Do we have one more question?
I have one quick question. I'm Chandrasekhar here again. Just can you tell me a little more on what is the near crosstalk and far end crosstalk?
Do you know this?
I can try it, or I can let you do it, Carrie. Either way.
You have a go, I'll fill in the holes. If there are any.
Okay. Okay. Usually, with cable testers, there's two actual parts to it. You have one end which actually does all the cable testing, and then you have another part of it that you stick on the other end of the cable, which is pretty much just used for a termination point to reflect your signals back. So, your near-end crosstalk... is the crosstalk that happens nearest the cable tester. And far end is crosstalk that happens like down by the other part of it that's the termination point. How did I do?
Yeah, I think you did well.
So that's pretty much all that is. Does that answer your question?
Brian, what I wanted to say, I have used a cable testing device. What will happen? You take the two ends of the RJ45, connect it to that device and check. Okay, you press a button and it will say it's okay or not okay. It will
It's
tell
in the
only so
recording.
much.
You'll get to hear it. And you'll need to listen to it anyway to do your lab. So all of your questions will be answered in there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to cabling best practices. Okay. Yeah, I was just checking the time. All right, we should be able to get through the rest of this in fairly simple time. All right, so your cabling best practices. It's important that the... So, it's important that your cables that you're using on your network pretty much are in sync with and let me retry this. It's important that the cables on the network adhere to the same standards. So for instance, like, you're not gonna wire up a network and use your T568A standards on part of it and T568B on another part. It's best to use the same standard on throughout the network if you can. But, you know, there may very well be times that you can't, but it's always a good idea to use the same standards. Now, as we talked about in Chapter 3, you have converged networks, which is voice, video, and data. And, so they're gonna need to have enough bandwidth to run all that through. And your cables have to be able to support all those, video and voice applications and all at the same time. So then they talk about cable standards that give you the maximum length of your cables, and you want to adhere to these or stick to these at all times. Now, as I said earlier, your UTP and your coaxial cable and your screened and shielded twisted pair, they're all susceptible to electromagnetic interference. So it's best to install them away from sources that could cause this, like fluorescent lighting or high voltage cabling. Now, if you improperly terminate a cable, or if you use a low-quality cable, your signal could be degraded. So it's best to follow the cable termination rules, make sure that everything's terminated properly before you put a piece of cable into a network. And you also want to test all your cables to make sure that they're going to operate the way that they're supposed to. And the other thing that they recommend is to label all the cables as they're being installed. And you can also put those labels in some form of network documentation, whether it's your network maps or, in our case, you can throw it in an Excel spreadsheet or a word processor or something. Just to give it, just to make sure that you know where everything is in the network. And they talk about structured cabling, which is a method of organization that makes cables easy to understand. And they also talk about cable management, which is a good idea to organize your cables for troubleshooting. And also it will protect them. So you want to kind of keep everything nice, neat, and organized so you know where these cables are running. And it also does help if you can put them in a spot that will protect them from chairs running over them or people walking over them, etc.
I have actually had that problem. We had a cable that was running in a house sort of across a doorway, and we'd actually run it across the bottom of the doorway, and by the time everybody had finished stepping on it, it actually smashed all the insulation and made a mess of it. So Brian's quite serious about that. It does matter.
I have a piece of cable here that some chairs got ran over, and the insulation is like completely ripped apart. You could actually feel the pairs of wires that are in there. And I'm going to put it on my cable tester at some point just to see what the deal is with it. Just because eventually I think that one's obviously not going to be usable for much longer. So yeah, it's a good idea to keep that stuff either underneath flooring if possible, or one way that I've actually run cable is up the wall and like on the ceiling. As long as there's no lighting that will interfere with it, fluorescent lighting or otherwise, you could get away with that. I've had to run it in attics before too, so that's a good way to keep it out of the way of everything. So, questions before we move on to the activity. Alright, not hearing anything. Here's what we gotta do. I'm gonna give you a scenario, and the only thing you need to give me is a yes or a no. Is there a cabling best practice or not? So, situation number one. In an effort to prevent people from tripping over cables, Charles ran cable through the false ceiling over fluorescent lighting. Best practice or not? Very good, that is not. Now, here's the question. And if somebody wants to answer, you can put your name in chat, or yeah, just put your name in chat and then I'll recognize you. But why would this not be a best practice? Sridhar, go ahead. Sridhar, go ahead. I didn't hear any audio. Alright, I'm not hearing any audio. Chandrasekhar, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah. I'm sorry. See, especially when you this fluorescent light has an inductor, it's electromagnetic. There will be electromagnetic interference for this particular cabling. And second thing, it has a high voltage. It is not a good practice to run these cables along with the high voltage cabling.
Very good. yeah, that would pretty much be a very good summary of that, because of the electrical interference from the fluorescent lighting. That would be exactly why it would not be a good practice. Okay. Situation number two. Yasmin labeled all cables and recorded their locations as she installed them. Best practice or not?
Can you repeat, Brian, once again, please?
Yeah. Situation is that Yasmin labeled all of the cables as she installed them and recorded their locations. So is this a best practice or not? OK. Okay, I have two yeses. Anybody else wanting to answer? Okay, well, yes, that is a best practice. Let's see. Situation three. Demon decided to follow T568 standard for all cables, or all straight through cables in his network. Best practice or not? Let's see. Okay, Swarna, can I ask you why you said no, that it would not be?
Because the straight cable won't check for the cross connections and all, the cross linking. I think the cross cables when they would be the better one for that. All attested for all the mishaps.
Well, that is true, but note that the situation didn't say for all cables. It was just looking at the straight through ones. So in that regard, it would be a best practice because he was using the same cabling standard throughout his entire network. Does that kind of make it clear?
No.
Okay. Where you lost as to why this is a best cabling practice?
Regarding the cross linking.
Okay. Since they don't really give any more information than the fact that he used the same standard for his straight-through cables, it doesn't really say one way or the other whether he uses crossovers or whether he's trying to connect multiple routers together in one shot. So that's... once again, why they're still considering it a best practice.
Okay, fine. Understood.
Okay. Alright. I just wanted to make sure that was cleared up before we go on. Alright. So... alright, so, Samaru needed to connect the device to the network. She located a bunch of cable in a drawer, and, let me restart this. Samaru needed to connect the device to the network. She located a bunch of old, hand-terminated cables in a drawer. Assuming the cables were good, she selected one and connected the device. Would this be a best practice or not? Very good. That would not be. Okay, we've got like 10 minutes left. I don't know if we have time to do this quiz or not. We might just do the quiz next lecture, because I really don't know if we have time to go through it or not.
Is it long?
What's that? It's a 10-question quiz.
Yeah, we'll do it next week.
Okay. Sounds good enough to me. So, given that, that's the end of Chapter 4. Questions on anything that we've covered in this chapter? Okay, then that's it. We're done for this lecture. And I'll post up on the mailing list for your tasks for this week.